happy Monday. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. And now it's back to the grind. And it's also back to a series of programs here on WFSU and our multi-platform arrangement for Political Perspectives. We began last week with a couple races for the Leon County Commission that are in play during this electoral season. And we capped off last week with a couple races for the Leon County School Board. There's another race for Leon County School Board we're going to be talking about today. Now, before we begin, a reminder, you are always invited to be part of Perspectives via phone and email. Our number is 850-414-1234. Or if it is long distance from you to us and you got the old school landline phone, it is 800-926-8809. Send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org, or a tweet at WFSU Perspective. This Perspectives episode will be telecast tonight at 7 o'clock, that's Eastern Time, on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4, in Leon, Gadsden, Wakulla, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties. And we're also live streaming today via Facebook. And we invite you to hang around online after the live radio program goes off the air straight up at noon. We'll continue the discussion on Facebook for about another 10, 11, 12 minutes. Our entire program, including the extended conversation, will be archived on WFSU.org/perspectives. And a reminder that Bandwagon will once again be coming to a TV near you, airing live on WFSU TV and 4FSU on Tuesday, July 31st. That'll start at 7 o'clock. That'll be the local candidates, the Capitol Cordsmen, all kinds of fun, excitement, thrills, spills, and chills right there in front of your TV set. We are now entertaining the two candidates for Leon County School Board District 5. We did a random draw this morning to see who would go first, and that is the challenger, Marcus Nicholas. Mr. Nicholas, thank you for coming, sir.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
We'll get a little bit into your candidacy in a moment, but let's say hi to the incumbent right now, Georgia Joy Bowen. Hi, Joy.
Hello, Tom. How are you? And thank you for having me here today.
It is a delight to have both of you here on Perspectives. If we could start with you, Mr. Nicholas, a little bit about your background, sir, and why you jumped into the Leon County School Board race.
Sure thing. So I started as a high school English teacher at Amos P. Godbey High School, where I served as an English teacher, but I was also a lead teacher, which means I worked with the district a lot, which means I didn't have summers off. So I was one of those year-round people who worked in the school system. So I did that for about 5 years. Then I went on to work at Tallahassee Community College as a professor of English. And in my capacity there, what was interesting was a number of my students who had taken my class at Godbey High School kind of transitioned with me into TCC because Godbey High School, which is the high school in District 5, transfers about 46% of its student population, give or take a couple annually over to TCC. So I was very familiar with the student population because, again, they went with me. But also at TCC, I got a great opportunity to work with the adjunct instructors, the dual enrollment adjunct instructors. One of the things that you have to do, or I had to do as a full-time faculty member, was mentor adjunct faculty, dual enrollment adjunct faculty. And because I had come out of the K-12 system, the dean, she decided to have me to mentor those guys and walk them through the system. And then I moved to Tallahassee Community College. Oh, I was at Tallahassee Community College. I became an administrator there, where I currently serve as an associate dean of academic partnerships and college success, which means I oversee the dual enrollment program, the career pathways program, all of the policies that govern the partnerships between the Leon County School System and the Tallahassee Community College. Tallahassee Community College. So I I understand the district both from the inside out because I taught in the district, but also from the outside in because I had to oversee, again, the policies that not only govern the Leon County School Board and make sure I was adherent to those policies, but also Tallahassee Community College, the Florida State statute for both K-12 and college. I'm married. Have a wife who teaches at Griffin Middle School. She's been there for 6 years now. She's entering her seventh year actually this year. And I have two children who are both in the K-12 system, Leon County Public School System. So it's been an incredible journey through the Leon County School System thus far. The question, why am I here? I think I'm qualified to be here, number one, I think I'm uniquely qualified to be here because I do truly understand not only the numbers where we're talking about school grades, where we're talking about the achievement gap, where we're talking about the retention rate, but I understand the narrative or the story behind the numbers. And until one understands the story behind the numbers, can one truly advocate for a system? I understand where we are right now. I understand where we are with regards to school safety. I know that we don't have a sustainable plan moving into the 18-19 year. We have those 17 or 18 elementary schools who will have to, unfortunately, in order for those school safety officers to be a part of that system, they're going to have to undergo the same system that that substitutes now have to undergo, which is problematic, right, for consistency, right? And that's also problematic for dependability. And any teacher will tell you that that when you get to the Title I schools, those substitutes don't choose those schools. And so that's the last thing we want to happen for our safety officers, which is why our superintendent will go and lobby once we have that big turnover in the city and the county commission, or the city commission, I'm sorry. We look at the achievement gap. The achievement gap has consistently been at 30%+. We now top Florida with regards to the achievement gap in math, science, and English. For economically disadvantaged versus non-economically disadvantaged students, as well as Black and white students. So that's a problem. We look at one of the priorities was removing one of the schools from the lowest 300. That's represented as the lowest 300 elementary schools in the state of Florida. We wanted to remove that. Well, we've added one, right? And so that's problematic. We look at teacher retention in Title I schools. We wanted to increase teacher retention. Well, go and look at the vacancies on the Leon County school system. We see that the story tells that Bond, Oak Ridge, and Riley, a school in our district, have the most vacancies. So how can we talk about teacher retention? How can we intelligently talk about shrinking the achievement gap if we can't keep any consistency? So that's problematic. So I just think that it's time for a new vision, a new direction, a vision and a direction who was a part of the Godby High School pendulum swing when we were in F. I was one of the lead teachers that swung us from an F to a B. So I know what it takes. I know how one has to roll up his sleeves to get the job done.
Good introductory remarks there. Let's go now to the incumbent in this race, Georgia Joy Bowen. And Ms. Bowen, again, a little bit about yourself, ma'am, and why you want another term on the Leon County School Board.
Thank you. I bring to this position 20 years of working with 20-plus years of issues, politics, student development, all of those things that make students better after having gone through high school. When I think about the work that we've done over the past years, we have many achievements that we can and should be proud of. I know that the Thorpe Street Corridor is my home, and it is the home of my constituents, and they have seen the merits of having me in the position for several years, and I hope they will continue to do that. Because I live in my community. I know that community. I did not just move into my community a few months ago to be able to run for office right now. I've been with these people at the funerals, the weddings, the backyard cookouts, those kinds of things. And so as an active board member, I'm aware not only of what policies are about, but having worked at Florida State University, which was the opportunity for me to get hands-on kinds of training, if you would, to work with a community such as ours is what I've done. So I bring those experiences to this job, and having worked over the last 20 years to be the kind of board member that could be depended on, I'm a clear voice. I'm forthright. I visit my schools. I've worked under four superintendents, each whom have different management styles and personalities, and who work very hard. But as a board member, it is my job to make policy and to produce a balanced budget. And we've done that. As a matter of fact, for the first time in 30 years, we have had a clean budget. Some folk will say, well, it took you 30 years. Well, whatever it took is what it took. Because the rules change and the laws change. And once you can get things centered so that you can know what is happening, then I think you can put a handle on what is happening. I have been a teacher as well in the public school system. I know what it feels like. And I guess one of the uniquenesses about me is that I know what it feels like not to have the resources that you need. So when we start to talk about the achievement gap, I look at it from a resource area of what it felt like as a student myself in a segregated system to have those resources passed by you and taken to some other place in the county when your school and your classmates were not getting that. So I bring that firsthand up close kind of experience that would speak to my knowledge and abilities to make sure that all of the students in this system of ours will have an opportunity to learn. So ours is not a perfect system, and I don't sit here with all of the answers today. I really don't. I come humbly just to talk about and to be listened to what more we need to do in our county and in our system to make it even better. I don't have any say-so about the low socioeconomic conditions that many of our students find themselves living in. And so when our students come to us wet, mad, bad, and sad, we have to teach them. And I have to make certain that the superintendent and staff and colleagues on the board with my one vote understands that one size does not fit all. There is no way that we can sit there and say this is the one thing that we're going to do and everything is going to be all right. Life is not just that way.
We have just heard the opening salvo from the two contenders for Leon County School Board District 5. We'll be right back. We are back on Political Perspectives on WFSU and also for FSU, Comcast Channel 4, and we are Facebook Living it right now, too. To be part of the program telephonically, 850-414-1234, or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org, and we'll get to it promptly. Speaking of the telephone, Claudette is on the line right now. Hi, Claudette. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. Hi, Joy and Marcus.
Hello.
I've known both of you for a long time.
Hi.
My question is, or my concern, I'll make it both, is that charter schools have been in the news lately. With their mandate to provide innovative education, I understand their appeal to students and parents. And as educators, as Joy just said, one size doesn't fit all, but in Leon County, our elementary teachers are required to teach a canned reading program, and in many cases, in many schools, be on the same page on a specific day. This is also true in math. My question is, what can we do as a district to make our schools more innovative, address those specific needs of low-performing schools and high-performing schools, so that charter schools are not such an appeal to our parents and students?
Terrific question, Claudette. Thank you very much. And Marcus Nicholas, if we could start with you, sir. The traditional public school response to the charter school phenomena or appeal, as Claudette calls it.
It's a wonderful question. I think we will start by putting the autonomy of the classroom back into the hands of teachers. In my campaign, when I first started, I've done now two listening sessions, and they've both been with teachers. We had a For Teachers Only listening session back in March, and then we've had one again probably a couple weeks ago. And what has come out of that listening session are site-based decision-making councils. And in those site-based decision-making councils, teachers would have the autonomy to work with the administrators in areas of curriculum. Those canned reading programs are a problem. I'll tell you, like I said, I was a teacher and my wife is a teacher. So, and again, Godby High School at the time when I was first hired was an F school, right? And so we had the state come in and try to tell us what to do. So what I found is that I abandoned those canned reading programs. I took it upon myself as an administrator, as a teacher, to instead of teaching the students how to read, I let them read. What a novel concept that is, right? And so in that reading, they begin to develop who they were, how they sounded as readers, because students need to listen to see what they sound like as readers. Cadence, fluency, flow, all of these things are fundamental and paramount to students understanding how to read. And so as they begin to read more and more and more, they were more and more comfortable versus what the canned reading programs do, which teaches them the techniques of how to read as opposed to allowing them to read. My wife did the same thing. And so my reading scores at Godby High School consistently were some of the highest reading scores at Godby High School. My wife's reading scores at Griffin Middle School are consistently some of the highest reading scores at Griffin Middle School. So what we have to do is we have to allow the teachers to do what the teachers are known to do. And that's what charter schools are. So I'm a champion for public education, but that's what the charter schools do, right? Charter schools are an incubator for transformational and experiential learning opportunities for their teachers. Their teachers have autonomy to experiment with various types of curriculum, whether it be blended learning, whether it be experiential learning, whatever type of learning they look to do, process-based learning, project-based learning, all of these different learning modalities that they experiment with. That's the appeal and that's the draw. Right now in the state of Florida, the latest stat, according to the Census Bureau, was 58% of teachers feel like they don't have classroom autonomy. And so it's these site decision-making councils. It's reducing class sizes. The NCTE, the National Council of Teachers of Education, suggests that we need to shrink classroom sizes. Right now in Leon County, we sit at about, for the elementary school K-3, we sit at about 18 or 19 students per class. The sweet spot, according to all of NCTE's, all of their research, would suggest that we need to sit at 15 students per, and that's where you could really start to explore and experiment with some of these curriculum. That's where the authentic feedback between you and the student. That's where the exploration of a student. That's where the magic happens, you know, per se. So that's what we need to do. That's what charter schools have gotten right. That's what we need to start doing. We need to let the teachers do what the teachers know how to do. And this is coming from a teacher.
But still, given the imperatives that are laid on to public education in Florida, and I'll ask you this then, Joy Bowen, is it possible for a district like Leon County to say, okay, teachers, be free little birds, experiment and innovate and do all these sorts of things that Mr. Nicholas just suggested?
I would think not. I would think that that is not where we are. I would love to feel that that can happen to the width and breadth that he has just explained that it happens. And everything is not tied to funding, but I do feel that there are opportunities for the site-based management that we currently have to allow our teachers to do what they need to do. It would be great just to walk in, do whatever it is you feel you need to do. But there are some guidelines and prescribed understandings that we must follow as a public traditional school system. The freedoms that come, our hands are tied in some ways, and we're not as allowed, if you would. So there seem to be two sets of rules here. I believe in traditional public schools, period. I think that the dollars that are being spent for charter schools should all go into the public traditional school funding budget, if you would, so that those innovative ideas and innovative ways and smaller class sizes and can be allowed to be held and taught in our public schools. One of the things that I continue to enjoy is the watching of how we must teach any student that comes from wherever the address is. We don't get to choose and select our students. Our students are diverse, and so we teach them. So we don't get to cherry pick what students would come to our schools because we are a public school system. And so far as there, again, the site-based management and the relationships that are formed between the superintendent, the principals, and others at the school, I think there's a lot to be said for that. And I think that it is happening in a way that good learning and achievements are happening. Can we do more? Every time we can do more and be better.
Last Thursday, I'll go ahead.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure that you don't misconstrue what I'm saying with this whimsical district that has no accountability, because Tallahassee School for Math and Sciences partake in the exact same tests that we all take part in. So on one account, yeah, there are some charter schools that don't adhere to some of the same rules and regulations, but we have to not speak globally. We have to speak locally and what they're doing locally, and that's the difference. Again, it's understanding the stories behind the numbers and not just what we think is actually happening in these schools. We actually have to be in these schools. And I'll say this, you know, with regard, well, you haven't asked your charter school question yet officially, so I don't want to digress too much, but I just wanted to make sure that that I made sure that was clear, that I'm not talking about this fantasy world with gumdrops and unicorns and this is how it's going to be. But there is a site-based decision-making council, not just site-based management, because that's completely different. A decision-making council is very, very different.
Let me give Ms. Bowen a chance to respond there.
I find it interesting to talk about lollipops and gumdrops and that kind of thing in our system. But behind every gumdrop and the lollipops, there is a kid that is sitting in a classroom waiting for somebody to take some personal interest in what that child needs to know and needs to learn. And I think our teachers and administrators do an absolutely wonderful job in making that happen. I'm not certain that I fully understand where my opponent is coming from with the need for the council, site counselors, because at our schools, with the understanding of lines of management and authority and ways of developing and dealing with the day-to-day issues and problems, and I'm all for transparency, but I really don't think that there needs to be another level of work placed on our teachers. I think that site-based management as is currently underway, and I think perhaps it could be tweaked a little bit, but if that means that more work is going to be provided there so that teachers have more to do and we're already underpaying them, I wish you could pay them more. So I would be, I'd look very carefully at the kinds of changes that are being proposed.
Okay, and again, Mr. Nicholas, how does that actually work in theory? I'm a teacher at Astoria Park, which is like two blocks from my house.
That's right.
And full disclosure, I used to be a school teacher many years ago. Okay, I'm a teacher there, and am I approached by the principal to say, would you like to be part of this kind of local council to help provide more autonomy to teachers? Like, how does that function?
Yeah, good question. So this is – it kind of functioned when I was at Godbey High School under Gene Ferguson and Jillian Gregory, who's now the assistant superintendent of schools. So the way it would work – so you already have you already have school improvement committees, right? And those school improvement committees meet over the summer. And those school improvement committees look at numbers, raw data. It's very rare that that data is explained, is expounded upon, where we understand all of the intricacies of how we've used the curriculum, where we've used the curriculum, the numbers, the evidence-based numbers in which the curriculum was decided. The school improvement committees don't really have all of that information. They have the raw data. And that's why I said it's very important to understand the narrative of the numbers. And so with this decision-making council, what you would do is it would take it one step further. And it would be on a volunteer, you know, you wouldn't force teachers to do it. You would say, do you want to be a part of this? And you would explain. So what it would be is they would have the numbers. There would be a curriculum that's put in front of them and say, the district wants us to do this curriculum. Do you have an alternative? If a teacher says, yes, I have an alternative, I want to do this, this, and this, I've been doing the research, and the research suggests that based on our demographic in this particular school, because as you know, Sealy, a Title I school, does not look like Astoria Park, a Title I school. So to use the exact same curriculum for Sealy and Astoria Park would be inequitable. It's what we call an inequitable situation, because the test scores clearly suggest that they may not need this particular curriculum. So that site-based committee would allow for a little bit of wiggle room, allow for those teachers within who spend the most time with those students to say, maybe we should invest in this as opposed to this, because the numbers bear out better in this situation for these demographic of student that we serve every day than it would be in this school. So all Title I schools are not built.
No, go ahead, Rob. I'm just trying to get his attention.
Okay. All righty.
Okay. I'll let you respond.
Okay.
Okay. I was going to say, I really don't believe that there's information that is withheld from teachers about the data, the raw data in the classrooms. So to suggest that that is the case, and that is why these councils would be there, that's what I'm hearing. And so, again, I say that one size does not fit all. So even on the site-based management, I want to think that we have principals and we have staff folk at the district level who take a look at what the needs are of our individual students and our schools. And to suggest that that is not the case, I don't know that I fully agree with that, because I know the principals and many of the assistant principals and most, but it's about the product that they are providing and the way they are handling the data to make sure that the curriculum needs are met.
You said, I visit my schools. That was in your opening statement, right?
Yes.
So my wife sits on one of these committees that I'm referencing.
Okay.
So this is not something that I'm making up. My wife actually sits on this. There is some information that is not fully contextualized to them. So you cannot be on a school improvement plan committee if all the information is not contextualized. You can't make a recommendation. It's unintelligible to offer a recommendation if all the information has not been contextualized for the individual.
So our principals and assistant principals and superintendents are not providing the information that our teachers need to make good decisions about what's happening in the school, according to what you're saying.
Please use the word contextualize.
Okay, well, I understand
that's a big
what
difference.
I understand what contextualize means. So you're okay. saying that there is a need for that, and that's not happening.
Okay,
I'm ready
well,
to move on to the next question, please.
Okay, the overarching, I guess, posit for this whole discussion. That we need to maybe recontextualize by moving on into another area is the fact that traditional public education is, in the opinion of some folks, including now the League of Women Voters, based
yes.
on the lawsuit that they initiated last week against this Amendment 8, which will go before the voters in November, is that there are still some unfair advantages being given to the entire warp and woof of charter schools, whether
Absolutely.
They're like math and science out mm-hmm. on North Monroe Street, mm-hmm. or maybe one of the local ones that went out of business after it was up and running for maybe
totally.
About 6 months. Mm-hmm. So let's get into that discussion. Let's talk about first, and we'll ping pong back and forth here. Ms. Bone, if we could start with you, that whole thing about the Amendment 8 that'll go before voters here. And we have about a minute before our next break. So let me just posit this, and then we'll get into the response on it. That you have actually a triple mm-hmm. question that is going to be facing voters on this particular amendment, all of which relates to public schools. Number
right.
one, a limitation of 8 years and out for local school board members,
right.
regardless of whether or not their community thinks that's appropriate. Number two, an enhancement of the requirement for civics instruction mm-hmm. in the public schools. And then kind of how can we put this delicately here?
Mm.
An unstated subcontext, which would give essentially state government control over charter-type schools, since they would not be initiated by the local school district. As we know, charters are when outside organizations come in, they request that a charter school be established within a jurisdiction like Leon County, then it's up to the school board to say yay or nay.
Mm-hmm.
You guys just made that decision here very recently.
Right.
So let's get into that discussion on the other side of this break, rapidly bearing down on us here as we continue our discussion with the two contenders for Leon County School Board District 5, the challenger, Marcus Nicholas, and the incumbent, Georgia Joy Bowen. We'll be right back here on Political Perspectives in a moment. Back on Political Perspectives, the race for Leon County School Board District 5. We also invite you to hang around online after the live radio program goes off the air as we continue the discussion on Facebook. And we are off to Amendment Number 8 and the incumbent, Joy Bowen. Your thoughts on that? It will, unless it is blocked by this League of Women Voters lawsuit, it
yes.
will go before the voters in November.
It will, and I hope that it is blocked. And I will tell you why. I find that this particular amendment is so bundled and is so tied up and is so hard to really see what the pieces and parts are. And if you want to choose a part that you agree with, you can't do that because there might be some other parts that you don't agree with. And so I think that particularly the part that deals with the control of public schools that the state is interested in, was that the hope? I'm not sure. But anyway, I don't believe that's nothing that I would be interested in having happen. I think that in this county, we are able to see what we need to do to correct our schools, and hopefully we'll be able to do that. The current superintendent is working hard to make certain that we do what we need to do, place resources, and make the necessary changes so that those schools with the lower grades can come up to par. And it is a continuing work in progress. We don't just sit idly by and wait to see when the next hammer is going to fall. They're working very hard right now. The school board terms. I think there's a lot to be said for school board individuals who want to continue to serve in a capacity. As a school board member, I would not be here. So longevity, along with the institutional memory and the knowledge that is there on the board, I think it serves well. I think given the times that we live in, there is this talk about incumbency, and you've been in a position too long. That is one of the elephants in the room with my being on the board right now and continuing to run. But I would say about this incumbent, there is no complacency. I am still vibrant. I am still efficient and effective in doing my job. And hopefully the voters of District 5 will see fit to vote me in one more time. Again, civics education, all of this is so important in teaching our children so that they can know about America and can know about life and living in and all of those things that ought to be a part of a civics lesson. And to have this bungled, it makes me think, what are you really trying to hide? What are you afraid of? Why isn't that somebody hasn't unbundled these things and put them in a single form so that I could vote for those ones rather than having to vote for the whole thing in or the whole thing out? And that was a piece about prisoners. I'm not sure that this is the one right now. I'm talking fast because I see. Anyway, those are my thoughts about
That's eight.
Amendment 8. Yes.
There
okay.
We
got
it. All okay. Right. Mr. All Nicholas, right. your yes, thoughts, yes. sir.
Yeah. And the School of Hope, that's not an Amendment Mm-mm. 8. I didn't see that.
Mm-mm.
So
No,
you mentioned that. So mm-hmm. I was just making sure I mentioned that. Civic literacy. Mm-hmm. So while civic literacy is phenomenal, again, you have to look at the entire context. Peace. And I'm curious about the testing implications. So if you add a new amendment, there's got to be outcomes that the state will expect you to produce. And so while I love for students to have the opportunity to engage in civic literacy, the skeptic in me, again, dealing with the Florida legislation, I've lived through FCAT and then FSA and then almost Common Core. Guys, remember that when it was we were right on the cusp of doing Common Core and then we backed out? So I've lived through all of these kind of these ebbs and flows in Florida statute and education. And so the only thing that concerns me is that in that civic literacy portion is that another test that teachers are going to have to subject their students to, that kill and drill nature. Is that so? Are they really going to be learning literacy? So that's I have a concern there. The charter school mandate, obviously, we all have a concern there because the local school boards will no longer have the opportunity to say yay and nay as our school board did just this past year.
Right.
I wish that our school board had done this, you know, in the previous years with the 8 or 9 other schools, the CKT, the governor's charters, the Capital City high schools, all of these schools that we allowed to come in. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Tom, you know, months later, they're gone. And so we've lost that money. So I wish that stance would have been taken earlier, but it's not. And what I'm afraid of is that in this Amendment 8, that we'll begin to have more of those cycles of coming in and going out and coming in and going out without much accountability to the local school boards. So that's problematic. The term limit, I would love to see a term limit in the school board to allow, you know, fresh ideas. I'm not taking away. And in this entire program, please understand that I'm not taking away from what Ms. Bowen brought to the district. I think when she was elected, it was very timely. I think it was a very timely thing, and I commend her for her for what she's done. But I do think we're in an evolving age of education where things change so fast. And what doesn't need to happen is the same person with, you know, in the same voice over and over and over and over and over again, especially if we have an 8% decrease at Godby High School. We haven't been in the 80s in graduation rate at Godby High School in years, a decade. And so if there's not new, you know, voices, people who have lived through this system, that opportunity is not there. So for all of those reasons, Amendment 8 with civic literacy, I'm on the fence about. I'm saying no.
It sounds like a consensus here from that. And we do have a Facebook comment just came in. Nikki says, and I think this is to your point before, Ms. Bowen. Nikki says, nothing is being withheld, but looking at raw data is different than looking at data in context.
Exactly.
I think back again to the councils.
Exactly right.
Yeah, okay.
That's a great comment. That's okay. Exactly right. It's all about the context.
Okay.
And Claudette's back with us on Facebook, wants to know who decides what reading curriculum is taught in each school.
That's a good question.
How much, I guess, variation can we have under the requirements now of state standardized testing and curriculum? Can I have something different at CLE than I do at Astoria Park?
Well, you know, you must first meet the state mandates. Whatever the state say you must do, you must do. Then as our school, our principal and administrators, you look at what the needs are at your particular schools and you make those calls. There are committees and book selection committees that will input information as to what needs to be happening at schools, okay? And so I'm thinking that, yes, that one size still does not fit all. And you don't have to do the same thing at Riley that you're doing at Astoria Park. The needs of the students are different there. And so in the selection of administrators by the superintendent, that's what he does. He will choose those people who understand the environment that they must work in, and look at the scores and the assessments from the students and make sure that the needs of those students are met. And so that's important to know. It's just, again, not one size fit all. I keep saying that. And so far as another voice, if that same voice is speaking the truth over and over, then why must there be a change in the voice if there is the opportunity to still talk about cutting edge opportunities and meet the needs of the district? I needed to throw that in there, and I appreciate that. And I thank you, Mr. Nicholas, for offering your services, you know, because that's how I got into this, offering my services. So that we're on the same page when it comes to that. But I have nothing against change. Let me speak very quickly about change. May I?
Sure.
I've been using red and white campaign signs every time I'd run for office, okay? And I thought this time I would be cute. I would change the color on my signs. Red and white, what, Bowen? You saw it. Bold, vote for Bowen. So I decided I'd get a little apple on there this time and paint the name Bowen black. Well, I bought those signs. I got them. I don't like them, but I paid for them. I've got to pay the cost. And so with every change, you need to look at what the cost is and what the product is and just what you're going to get, and you've got to be willing to live with that. And again, change is about making certain that you know what you want the outcome to be. And all of the time, you're not going to know that. So my signs that I had first, they were fine. I chose to change just because I needed to. Long question, longer answer.
Okay.
All right.
Mr. Nicholas. The original question was textbooks and who does, I mean, not textbooks, but
curriculum.
Curriculum. Mm-hmm. Curriculum. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Bowen talked about the textbooks. So the textbook committee at a school curriculum is very different than who decides the reading curriculum. Reading curriculums are district contracts. Reading curriculums are district contracts. Textbook committees are done at the school level, because I sat on a bunch of textbook committees. So every 2 or 3 years, what we do with textbook committees is that we sit through, and these, you know, Pearson and McGraw-Hill and others come to us and they say, hey, you know, which textbook you want? And so we get all these textbooks and we have to review them and make a recommendation. That's very different from reading curriculums. Just so that we're clear, unless it's changed for this year, reading curriculums our district contracts.
Well, I can say this about that. As a board member making policy, working with the superintendent staff, and understanding that contracts and other pieces of legal material, if you would, comes to us, and we take a look at that to make certain that we've got what we need. And so at this point, curriculums are there, and still every curriculum is not the same. So that the individual needs of the children at the schools are met.
Yeah, much has been made, though, and this was at the outset of the program, where Students are almost in lockstep when it comes to, okay, if this is Tuesday, you yes. are on page exactly. 45. Mm-hmm. And that seems a little bit micromanaged as far as...
That's not where we are.
Well, actually, I'm sorry, Ms. Bowen. It actually is. So the problem with the district reading programs, not district reading, the reading curriculums that we bring in, those reading curriculums were created by probably innovative teachers who understood the context of their room and understood that here's where my students are at this point, and if I continue to matriculate them into new lessons, they will probably be here, 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 here. The reason I know that is because I help Florida, Just Read Florida, kind of create one when I was a teacher. When Stu Greenberg was there, I actually helped do that. So I know how they're. I know how they're created, and so those things. What happens? Because my son goes through one right now, and so you have to read. You have to do this on this day, this on this day, this on this day, which is counterintuitive to what a teacher actually does. What do teachers do? They provide differentiated instruction. They provide flexibility in the classroom, mm-hmm. and they have to be able to adapt to where the students are. So those reading curriculums are actually counterintuitive to how we are trained as teachers.
And how do you see that working, though, Ms. Bowen? Do teachers have the flexibility to, this student is here. We need to work with them a little bit more before moving them along, whereas some of these kids are racing ahead. They're almost at the end of the book, and you're halfway through the term. So can they do that? Or
yes, I think they can. And I would think that if they're a teacher who cannot do that, then I think we need to start to look at the teacher's abilities. If there's a little joy in my classroom and I am not able to keep up with the pace, then what's the teacher there for? What are you going to do, just leave me sitting over here in the corner because I didn't keep up with everybody else? I want to think that our teachers are strong enough to take a look at every child's needs, skills, and abilities to move them along. I just really want to think that that would be the case. And if that is not the case, then we can deal with some of the issues that we have. And we're not a perfect system. We can do some things better. That may be one of them. But I do know that to move kids along and to make certain that they get what they need would be paramount in my mind.
And that's why we need you're right, Ms. Joy, and that's why we need a decision, a shared decision-making council.
Well,
because that shared decision-making council, again, it talks about curriculum. So if we circle back to the original thing that I talked about, curriculum that's being done at the district level, right? And so if we have these curriculum, if we create these curriculum, if we build these curriculum, where teachers have that flexibility, where teachers have that autonomy at the classroom level. We're not talking about the district level. We're talking about the classroom level. There are some teachers who absolutely need that lockstep. As a beginning teacher, let me tell you my experience as a beginning teacher. I was thrown in a classroom with 30 high school students, and I was scared out of my mind because at any point they could all converge and say no. And because as a beginning teacher, you're unfamiliar with pacing, you're unfamiliar with classroom management at a practical level, right? Those teachers may need the lockstep. When it comes to veteran teachers, again, that's when a shared decision-making council happens, and that decision will be made at a site level between the administrator and the teacher.
Okay. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. And so when you're that frightened and you come in there with that kind of feeling, and I'm going to think, well, where was the training that you got when you were in your college classes? That's not real?
No. Internships are very different.
I know. I've been on one. But my point still is what is the preparation that you have when you step from the college level into the class? Where's the preparation that was there that prepares you to be able to stand there and to teach in a diverse classroom, in a diverse environment? Some things need to happen before our teachers come to us. And some of those things we need to be working with our universities and our colleges on so that that kind of fear and that kind of interpretation is not found in a young teacher where there are these kids. I know what it felt like. I worked at Jones High School. Mm-hmm. And if you can live through Jones High School, you're ready for the world. And so I am. So you stand there and you are trying to get everything together. So I think there is something missing that we need to provide for our teachers before they get there. And then I think that, yes, veteran teachers and mentors are certainly important to help our teachers succeed once they get on our campuses. So I'm all about transparency and helping teachers to succeed and not trying to hide information and putting anybody down. We do some great things. We can do better.
Well, one thing we can do is over the next few minutes, we can actually continue this conversation on Facebook Live as we're bearing down on the conclusion of the program on WFSU-FM and also on 4FSU Comcast Channel 4. We have been talking to the two contenders for Leon County School Board District 5. The incumbent is Georgia Joy Bowen.
Yes.
And Mr. Marcus Nicholas is the challenger in that race, and we'll continue this extended conversation momentarily. Perspectives produced, though, by WFSU in Tallahassee. Technical assistance on the radio side, Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls. And I'm Tom Flanagan, our crew for today on 4FSU, Houston Brannon, Suzanne Smith, Brandy Staney, Robbie Gaffney, Christian Somersill, Carly Soder, and thank you very much, Kadesha Eliason, for all of your great work here with us at WFSU. A great job on producing the show today. For Facebook Live and WFSU.org, Tricia Moynihan. And tomorrow we begin our consideration of three Tallahassee City Commission races, starting with seat three. We'll reconnect then right here on Perspectives. Welcome to the extended discussion of the Leon County School Board District 5 race here on our Perspectives, coming to you live on the internet. And I'm Tom, and we are still with our two contenders for the race, the challenger, Marcus Nicholas, and Georgia Joy Bowen, the incumbent in the Leon County School Board. And before we give our kind of closing summation statements, one thing, again, being a former teacher that I found fascinating, this was coming off of what you said, Joy, is there no longer a requirement for student teaching for state certification of teachers in Florida?
Yes, there is still that requirement. They must be certified. Yes.
But as far as a student teaching being a part of that, that was back in 10,000 years ago when I was a teacher, that was dependent on your getting out of the program alive at the college or university level.
Okay.
You had to student teach in an actual public school an entire semester before they'd let you out of there with a degree.
Right. That is still very much still the same practice. Your internships must... You must get an internship in a school. Part of what I was discussing was the need to have more of teaching about teaching in diverse environments with the students who may not look like me, who may look like me, but understanding the environments they come from and the atmosphere and being able to bring still those strengths, those skills sets and abilities to teach those students who come from low socioeconomic backgrounds or socioeconomic backgrounds, high ones, so that you can meet all of the needs and understand those learning needs.
Yeah, I would suspect argument from you there, Mr.
No, absolutely. But I think that to your question, Tom, is that still a requirement? Yeah, of course it's still a requirement. But it's a very different experience when you are with the established teacher, and the established teacher is in the room with you at all times, and you become the established teacher. That is a completely different dynamic that until you've lived through it, and you said you've been a teacher and Ms. Joy has been a teacher, until you've lived through that experience, one could never know how it's completely different when you are solely responsible. When as a student teacher, you are not solely responsible for the students, for behavior, for pacing. You have somebody there to guide you through if the students get out of hand. You have someone there who, again, is the established veteran who was there to mitigate the damage and redirect the student's attention. So it's very different.
You're right. Once that safety net is gone,
You're on your own. Yes. Exactly right. You've got to stand there and do what you've been contracted to do.
Exactly right.
And remember, the students can smell fear.
Oh, yes, don't we know that?
Well, folks, I thought we'd do with our extended conversation here is to give each of you full throttle to really express your particular skill sets, what you bring to the table, and why, and certainly your opinion, and ostensibly the opinion of those who support you, that you are the preferred person to either continue in this job or to assume the mantle. So again, given the random drawing that we had at the beginning of the program. Marcus Nicholas, the floor is yours, sir, for about two or three minutes. Go ahead.
Ta-da.
Ta-da.
Yeah, that's a good one. So I would like to say that, again, let me first say I would be remiss if I did not say that the 20 years that Ms. Bowen has put in, is admirable. Anybody who is a public servant for 20 years has to be recognized and respected at all times. So please hear me in our discussion today. It's with respect that I say that I disagree in some of the positions. What I will say is that District 5 needs a leader. Who will help the overworked, the underpaid, and the underfunded district achieve its mission. And I would say I would like to continue that work. It won't be a new work. The only thing that will be different is now I will be sitting behind a dais. But understand that I've been doing this for the last 10 years, intimately involved with the district for the last 10 years, including my stint as a high school teacher, where, again, I was a part of that group that Connie Fender brought in, who was a district representative for a long time, brought in to help create a manual for first-year teachers. It was a survival manual for first-year teachers. I was a part of that committee that helped to create that manual. So I was one of the ones who facilitated the evaluation kit when eye observation was the big thing back in the day. I was one of those district teacher leaders. I've been leading in this district for 10 years, and now as a community partner at Tallahassee Community College, I build bridges, I build programs to transition students from high school into college, most notably the academic bridge partnership, where students who are graduating from high school who fell behind in reading or math, I built that program so that they could, a free program, so that they can have refresher courses to transition so they won't come into college algebra behind. Because as we have seen over and over and over again from K to grades 20, the K to 20 system, math is the barrier that stifles most of our kids. If you don't believe me, ask Pineview, whose numbers are at 9% of their lowest students made achievement gains last year. So I'm building programs and infrastructure right now. So I want to continue that work. So again, the only thing that's going to be new is me behind the dais. So that's kind of my spiel, and that's my appeal, and that's who I am.
The incumbent, Marcus Nicholas, the challenger, and the incumbent is Georgia Joy Bowen, and the microphone is yours, ma'am.
Thank you, Tom. I bring to this position 20 years of experience, as I stated earlier, of working with budgets and individuals, personnel issues, all related to student development. I've enjoyed working in this district, and I thank my constituents for seeing the worth of my skills and abilities. Yes, I've been on this job for 20 years. Yes, I have. And people are looking at incumbents now and calling them old. Well, I hope that God will give them a chance to be the age that I am. I'm still making good decisions. I'm efficient. I'm effective. I make policy. I know the rules. I know what being a boardsman is. I'm not a superintendent. I'm not a teacher. We have balanced the budget. We have done that with great concern and with great opportunity to make sure that the needs of our students are met. I believe that all of the citizens in this community are to be valued. I don't think, again, that one size fits all. I am not interested in being a principal, a teacher. I want to make board decisions. I am an advocate for all of the parents and the teachers and staff here in Leon County. Again, I don't believe that you can really understand being what a board member is and until you have an understanding of how resources are used. I know what it feels like having gone to a segregated high school where the funds, again, were passed by my door. I know what it feels like having gone to a segregated, if you would, university. And so it is my role, I believe, to keep the watch to make sure that the children of District 5 have what they need. I'm open. I'm forthright. I am in and out of the schools. I make the visitations. I've even stepped outside of District 5. I just don't stay in District 5. I visit the other districts. I have been elected the president of the Florida School Boards Association, which was all 64 counties at the time, so that the cutting edge information could be still a part of what we could do and learn here in Leon County Schools. So my job and role is beyond that of just the board member. I was out and about the other day up at Blue Haven Restaurant, a place up northwest where there are beautiful restaurants where people can go and take their children and have a nice meal. And I'm thinking, I'm in some other city. Why can't we have things like that out down the Thorpe Street corridor? I offer that because it's my responsibility to have taught whatever the child is that comes from the address. There is somebody else who's supposed to make sure that there are jobs and the economic structure and that kind of thing. So people often point the fingers at the school board for having not done this or that. So I'm asking my neighbors, give back to the community. If you are over your 60th birthday, which I am, and you know folk are talking about that, give back. You still have some wonderful things that you can do. So I'm vibrant. I hope to be there to continue to develop technological corridors, to walk the facilities. I've even started a PTO at Riley when there was not one. Most recently, I have brought to Godby High School the junior national hookup of Black women. So we are out and about. And I don't do a lot of loud talking, but there is still opportunities for the community to know what we're doing. And I think we're doing that. And I applaud Mr. Nicholas for, again, offering his services. That's how you get into this. And so I'm very pleased to be here. Safety is continuing to be my number one priority. I don't believe in guns in the classroom. I think that the sheriff's department and the police department should be the ones to provide that kind of safety. We are instituting a new bus system, and we've just signed an MOU with the Children's Home Society, FSU Medical School, and Florida A&M to build what I'm calling a wraparound school over at Sable Palm. This school is going to provide holistic services for the whole community, Tom, where families can come in and get food, though we send food out from Godby. There are a lot of things we do. We can do a better job of selling what we do, but they can go to this wraparound school. They can get their eyes checked. They can get dental work. They can get leadership training and those kinds of things. So we have some things underway. And so to be called the fossil, which is what I understand I'm being called out there, that is a wonderful thing to be called a fossil. So I am asking the voters of District 5 to vote one more time for Georgia Joy Bowen, School Board, District 5. We'll make it happen. Sorry if I got your ears. Loud voice.
I wasn't expecting that one.
Thank you, Ms. Bowen, and thank you, Mr. Nicholas. It has been a vibrant and energetic discussion here today on Perspectives. Oh, folks, thanks so much for joining us, and we will be back tomorrow starting our 3-program stint with the Tallahassee City Commission contenders. We'll see you then on Perspectives.